My guest today is someone that I'd heard about for a long time, but was only introduced to a couple of weeks ago by Maria Sipka, who was a guest on G'day World, 316 or 315, I think. His name is Bill Liao. Bill is a Melbourne-born entrepreneur, now based in Switzerland, and he's done a lot of things. He was involved in some startups in the dawn of the internet era in Australia that were successful, and he's gone on to be one of the original investors and co-founders of a social networking site in Europe called Zing.com, Z-I-N-G. But the real reason I invited him onto the show today was to discuss a project of his called iDeclare, where, as you'll hear him describe in the show, he's basically trying to get the people of the world to make a personal declaration, a personal statement about their values towards the human species and the survival of the race, basically. It's a very, very ambitious project. I think some of the things that I do are crazy ambitious, but Bill makes me look like an amateur. Very, very smart guy, very successful, very humble, very nice guy. We had a great chat over Skype a few weeks ago for a couple of hours and wee hours of the morning my time. And I was fortunate enough to get him back on today for a bit of a chat on G'day World. And it's the what I hope will be the first of a series of chats that I'll have with Bill over the next couple of months, just exploring what he's doing and his motivations for it. So without any further ado, G'day World with Bill Liao. In keeping with my theme of making the world a better place and building a vision for the future of the human race today, I'm very pleased to have an expat Aussie on the show speaking to me from somewhere in the bowels of Switzerland, serial entrepreneur Bill Liao. Welcome to the show, Bill.
Thank you very much, Cameron. And I begin with a correction.
Uh-oh.
I'm actually not, as you ascribed, in the bowels of Switzerland, enjoying the blessings of the attentions of the gnomes. I'm actually sitting in the sun in the Fisherman's Wharf Sheraton in sunny San Francisco.
You're very hard to keep track of, man.
Indeed. Anticipating, hopefully, an earthquake-free stay.
And what are you doing in San Fran?
I'm actually spending the day, or I was spending the day, with my good friend John Resch, who has been working with me on the next phase of my declaration website, or the declaration website, where we're enticing authors to add their own pithy personal declarations for action to, indeed, following the theme of your shows recently, save the world.
Well, I want to talk obviously mostly about that. Let's go back a bit though and give people a little bit of perspective of your story. Were you born in Australia?
Yes, I was born in Kew in St. George's Hospital in Melbourne, and I was conceived in Taiwan, and I bear to this day a small gold label on my left heel. It says made in Taiwan.
Took me a couple of seconds, but I figured where you were going with that. And tell it to me a little bit about your parents. What were their backgrounds?
Well, my father fled the Japanese when he was about 12. His family was split down the middle by the Japanese invasion, and he ended up in Taiwan at the University of Taiwan. And my mother was born just towards the end of the Second World War, and she ended up studying Chinese, which for an Australian woman of the time was quite an unusual thing. And she ended up meeting my father as she did her final year studying Asian literature in Taiwan.
She was a skip. And
a what?
A skip.
A skip.
You never heard that term.
No. What's a skip?
That's what non-white Anglo-Australians call white Anglo-Australians. A skippy. How long did you live in Melbourne? You never heard that term?
Never. Not nice. Once. Okay. I think it's my pure abhorrence for all things that have an origin in bigotry.
Right. I think it comes from, the Italian and Greek immigrants here in the 50s. Anyway. So she was an Anglo.
Scottish, English descent.
Yep.
Third generation Australian.
Okay. And she met your dad. And what did they do career-wise? I mean, did they have an entrepreneurship background?
Pretty far from it, really. Dad, they're both academics. Mum has a PhD in Asian literature. Dad taught, amongst other things, English. And my father actually ended up as a radio broadcaster for Radio Australia.
Hmm.
So he ended up as a journalist. And at one point, he had 40 million listeners across Asia every night.
Wow.
Because Radio Australia was, in fact, the only Western channel that wasn't jammed routinely by the Chinese, the Indonesians, the Vietnamese, etc. So Radio Australia actually played a very big part in Australia's voice and the Western world's voice in Asia for many, many years.
I have heard that. 40 million, that's some reach.
Yes, I was always asking him if he could just ask them to all send me, a 10-cent stamp or something.
The reason I ask about your parents' background is when I look at people that, A, are serial entrepreneurs, and B, have the audacity to believe that they can change the world, it's interesting to look at their upbringing and their childhood and to see how that may have affected them and their outlook on life. And I found through interviewing entrepreneurs over the last couple of years that you tend to hear one of two stories. You hear the story where, yes, I was brought up in a household where we were taught to believe that we could be anything we wanted to be, and it was a very positive household, and my parents worked in a fish and chip shop, or they ran a fruit store, and I learnt from the ground up what it was like to run something. Or sometimes the opposite end of the scale, as is my story, grew up with, parents that were completely working schmoes, a father who was unemployed for many years, and I grew up thinking there's no way I'm ever going to end up like that, and you are running from your upbringing rather than using it as a ladder, I guess. Would you describe your story as either of those? With academics, how did you end up as an entrepreneur?
Well, I hate to break your stereotype, but it seems so well described and articulated.
Stereotypes are there to be broken, Bill. You go for your life, man.
I can only say that I have two extremely loving and articulate parents who always wished for me to be an academic. And I failed high school three times, which basically demonstrates that I'm both determined and thick. And really, I became an entrepreneur, and I also decided that I could perhaps catalyze some major change in the world, some transformation of some of our issues, probably more because I'm just too stupid to not know I shouldn't be doing it. But no, neither was it a rebellion against my parents' values, which I also hold in high esteem, nor was it modeling their behavior. Both my parents are very effective at what they do. They're very committed to what they were passionate about when they were working. My dad, was a public servant really for his whole life, since coming to Australia.
Okay. Well, thanks for completely screwing that up for me, but no, it's fascinating.
Well, absolutely welcome, Cameron. I'm here to serve.
And I'd love to drill down on that in more depth, but we should move on in this particular show. So you've got a couple of roles at the moment. You're still involved in Zing.com?
Indeed, I am what the Germans call a Mitglied des Aufsichtsrat, which is a fancy German way of saying non-executive director.
Okay, you were one of the founders of Zing, weren't you, and the CEO?
No, not the CEO. I was CEO is CEO and founder is Lars Hinrichs, and I'm his co-founder. And I've been involved from day one. I was also their first investor. The honor of CEO still is firmly in his hands. It's something that I don't personally prefer to be, is CEO.
Okay. So, and Zing, from my understanding, is the largest social network in Europe. Is that correct? Have I got anything right yet this morning?
No, not so far.
So much for my research.
I'm starting to question some of the things that you've said to me.
I didn't even get the time right for the interview this morning. It's not my day, man, I tell you.
Yes, and you keep saying this morning, is it the interviewer's time zone or the interviewee's time zone that defines that?
I told you before, anyway. The time zone is wherever I am. That is the time zone that everyone should be in.
Indeed, indeed. And I think I'm going to have to actually recalibrate my watch and stamp a little Cameron note on there, because I think that's very, very important for me for the future. Really looking at Zing is something that I'm incredibly proud of, because it is a social network for business people that is the first that was multilingual. In fact, it's still the largest multilingual network. We cover 16 most popular languages on Earth, and have done since inception. In fact, I created the first English version of the site, and I was very happy that it was Australian English that was used. And the thing that I'm most proud about Zing is that it is creating value in the world. It actually does something that people pay for, and the thing it does is it makes it easier for people to network, and that's a term that has, I think, a few bad connotations, but still, network for business in a way that really very few other sites actually allow you to do, which is to make introductions. I think the most important tool for a business person is their ability to find people and bring them together. And that's what Zing was designed to do from the very start, and it's been doing it very, very successfully. So much so that we actually took the company public in 2006 in December, and it's been very well received on the main board of the Frankfurt Stock Exchange.
Congratulations on that. In order to help people listening understand what Zing looks like, and it's Zing with an X, by the way, folks, X-I-N-G, if you were to compare it to LinkedIn, which is, I guess, the site that most people are probably familiar with from a business networking perspective, how would you compare it to LinkedIn at this stage?
Well, that's something that I wouldn't compare it to, just because the two sites have a very different philosophy. Zing is a network where, I suppose, you could call it a grown-up version of Facebook. We started with pictures, and we started with the view that people wanted to see each other. And we started with the view that it's better to be open than closed. LinkedIn introduced much later into its design the idea that people could perhaps connect to each other if they didn't know each other. And because of that, LinkedIn has a much more sort of closed feel to it between people. And again, it's not about comparison. I mean, LinkedIn does a very, very different job. It's really about referrals, whereas Zing is really about introductions. Now, why does that matter? Well, if you look at the way that you do business, it is less likely that you refer one person to another if you don't know them. Whereas if you just meet someone for the first time, it is possible that you would introduce them to somebody else that you know, if you know that they have something of interest to that person. And if you want to look at creating social capital, probably the best thing you can do is keep a little track of who needs to meet people and introduce them. And I think I've demonstrated that to you myself.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's you say that the sites are different then from a psychological perspective?
From a ontological perspective.
Oh, that's a big word.
They exist, well, you know.
Have something to do with birds?
No, that would be an ornithological perspective, which, given the recent success of the book The Black Swan, perhaps may be true, in fact, that from an ornithological perspective, they are also different creatures. Let us stray back from zoology back to commerce and look at ontology, which is about the nature of being. I personally believe that websites and businesses tend to reflect in some measure the people who run them and the culture that they're brought up on. And Zing has benefited from 17 different nationalities. And so as a result, we have, I think, quite an effective system for building social capital between business people. And that makes it really different from the nature of